Welcome to this week's episode of Auburn Unleashed. I'm your host, Adam Clayton, joined by our co-host, Jim Patton.
I don't like that co-host. I think I want to be your wingman, Adam. That's the new term.
Are we now pilots? Wingman?
Wingman.
Or are we going to a bar? Are you going to be my wingman there?
I'm going to be your wingman. You're single. I'm married. I got to be the wingman.
Well, Jim, how are you? Now, I'm afraid to ask that question after the response I got from you last episode. But
I had a little problem last episode. I was honest about it, but I'm doing much better this week.
Well, Jim, we actually have promised our listeners that we were going to have Tom Gossam as our guest, and we actually have done an interview with Tom.
Tom was a great player at Auburn, started 3 years, was a wide receiver, walk-on. I don't believe there might have been one other black athlete when he walked home, maybe two, but he was the first black athlete at Auburn to get a degree. He started 3 years, and he's had one of the most interesting careers. He's actually a professional actor. He's written a book. He does things for charity. He's just a super great, interesting, grounded fella, and I think everybody will really enjoy this show with him as a guest.
And Jim, I just want to point out, I looked up his credits, and it's absolutely amazing. He, of course, got his start in the Heat of the Night as the mayor. And then just to name a few shows and movies he's been involved in, he played in the movie Fight Club with Brad Pitt. Played in a movie called Miss Evers' Boys, which followed. It was the story of the U.S. experiments on African Americans with syphilis. He also has made appearances on CSI, Boston Legal, The West Wing, ER, Chicago Hope, and NYPD Blue.
Yes, and he was a journalism major at Auburn, which I was also, and I was a wide receiver right behind him, and he has written an excellent book. We'll get him to talk about it, but it's been well received. It's actually called Walk On, but we'll ask him about all that here. Matter of fact, we can get right to him.
Let's get right to him. And Jim, he had so much to say. It's actually going to fall into two episodes. So let's get right to the interview, and hope you guys enjoy this.
Well, I've got Tom Gossam on the line here, and we've talked about him for a couple of weeks. And what a very interesting man. Tom, how are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing great, and I appreciate you guys having me on, and I hope you guys are doing equally as great. And I know you are looking forward to the football season.
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, Tom, tell our listeners there that don't know, that might be younger than you and I, when you played at Auburn.
I played at Auburn in 72, 3, and 4. I was on the team. I joined the team in 70 on the freshman team. 71, I was redshirted, made the travel squad, and then actually started for the next 3 years.
I remember I came a little after you. You were one of my heroes. You had majored in journalism, and I was majoring in journalism, and you was a wide receiver, and I was a wannabe right wide receiver. So you really were one of my heroes then. I don't know that I ever communicated that to you really well, but you were.
I appreciate that very much. I do remember you very well. I thought you were a very fine wide receiver, and then luckily we had a bunch of good wide receivers back then. And I did do journalism. I did radio and television. Enjoyed journalism a lot. I think those things that I learned at Auburn in pursuing my degree are things that I have been able to use to make a living for these last 30-some-odd years, or however many years it's been. So it definitely was, I guess I was directed back in that day, and things seem to have worked out well.
And you actually, and I think this is amazing, if I'm correct on this, for back then, you actually walked on at Auburn and earned a scholarship really quickly. Is that correct? Am I correct in that?
Walked on in the fall of 1970, played on the freshman team. I think I had a good freshman camp. It was fairly obvious that I was an athlete that had been overlooked, did not get any scholarship offers coming out of John Carroll High School. We probably were a 3A school playing at the 6A level, and so consequently we got trounced a lot. And then we changed coaches my senior year, which wasn't good for me personally. And so I, Auburn was the school I decided I wanted to go to. And, I went to Auburn, went to meet Coach Jones, who was a freshman coach, asked him if I could walk on. He told me yes. And I was a different walk on because a lot of the walk ons, I guess the more sought after walk ons would be guys like Bill Newton and guys who, Roger Mitchell, guys who'd had great high school careers, but they felt like they were tweeners for some reason. They weren't quite the size they would want, and so they would encourage them to walk on. I just showed up out of the blue and had a good freshman year. Went out for did not go out for winter workout, played basketball all winter, and went out in the spring. And, of course, Pat Sullivan was preparing for his senior year and Terry Beasley. Luckily, Terry Beasley was the starter and the all-American, but that means he didn't like to practice. So I got all his practice time, and Pat would throw me the ball. And so I had a great spring, and at the end of that spring, they awarded me a scholarship. So, yeah, I was awarded a scholarship in less than a year, and like I said, was able to start the next 3 years. We had great teams. We finished number 5, 8, and 9, 3 of the 4 years I was on the team, so.
Yeah, a matter of fact, I believe it was your senior year playing Alabama where, you know, I hate to talk about a referee call, but I just will never forget that play where you executed everything perfectly and they called it back, and I believe we would have beat Alabama that year if they hadn't. You want to talk about that
yeah,
play?
Yeah, no problem. I think the thing that people don't remember about that play is that it occurred in the middle of the third quarter, and we were behind 17-7. So even if we had gotten to 17-14, it doesn't mean we would have won that game. And that's the little part that leaks out. But you know, as legends go, you know, don't confuse the legend with the fact. But it was a great play. It was a play we had set up Mike Washington. The year before, Mike Washington had jumped an out route, went down and ran about 8 yards and cut to the sideline. Randy threw me the ball. Mike jumped the route and almost scored. We were immediately behind. And so Coach Barfield's offensive coordinator next year, so we put an out and up in for Mike. The problem was we ran it into the short side of the field, and we always like to run stuff into the short side of the field. And I remember when he called it, I looked over at Coach Barfield, and I just nodded like, you know, hey, this is the short side of the field, because we were into the hash marks, and we didn't have a whole lot of room. But it was perfect, as you said. Went down, made the fake on Mike. He bit on it. Gargis pumped the ball. Mike was all out of position, so all he could do was throw his body at me, and he hit me. I don't know. They said I came my toe. What I understand is my toe, the half of my big toe came down on the line, but it wasn't called by the guy who was on the.
All right, Tom, we had some technical difficulty, and you just told us how your toe might have hit the line when Washington made his desperate dive for you, just trying to slow you up before the ball was thrown, but that the referee right there didn't call it, and it was a late flag. But go on and bring us through that play.
Well, I guess if you made the comparison to basketball, and you got a guy that's on a breakaway layup, and there's nothing you can do, and so you just reach out and grab him and hold him to keep him from scoring, I think that was pretty much what Mike did. I mean, he was beaten, and so he just threw his body at me, and you know, I never saw it, and never had a good angle, but they said that, my toe hit the line. The official right there, the sideline official ran all the way to the end zone with me, signaled touchdown. It was called by the backfield judge. After I caught the ball, I had Ricky Davis to beat, the safety. He had the angle on me and came over to try and, stop me, and, I always tell people I grew up in a little community called Rosin Heights, so I gave him the Rosin Heights limp leg, and he missed me, and I ran on into the end zone. Big, big celebration, as you can imagine. And we were just kind of moving over. The pile was moving over to kick the extra point, and then the confusion set in. And I think the thing, Coach Jordan was upset, and we were all upset. The thing that probably was the most disturbing is not only did he not get a touchdown, you know, it was arguably whether the ball was in the air or not when he hit me. And so if, in fact, the ball was in the air, we should have gotten interference. We ended up with no touchdown, no first down. We ended up fourth down having a punt. And as I said, it was the middle of the third quarter, so it took us a while to regroup. Actually, it took us probably the rest of the third quarter. I mean, you could just look at the guys' faces in the huddle, and I mean, they were just spooked and freaked out. But we regrouped, and then we Mitchell Jackson came in, and we went down the field on them and scored a touchdown, made it 17-13, held them and got a chance to get the ball. We got the ball back at midfield with like a minute and so odd left, and we tried to run a tight end around and ended the ball deep in the backfield. The dude who used to be the coach at Alabama, I can't think of his name, he broke through and,
Dubose,
and knocked the ball out of Dan Nugent's hand. Gargis was trying to hand it to Nugent. He knocked it out of his hand, and that was the end of the ball game, man. It was a sorry, sorry way to end a great, great ball game. A matter of fact, later on when I was writing my book, one of the chapters is called The Gossam Incident. There's a letter that I found by a guy who lived in Birmingham, Mr. George, and I have to look his name up, but he wrote a letter to President Philpott about that play. President Philpott, Harry Philpott was president of Auburn at the time, wrote a letter to Dr. Philpott about what he called the Gossam Incident and wondered if there was any way to get that decision overturned. And basically doubted whether how the play unfolded according to the referees. But it was a great play. For me, it was a great play. I made the play. You couldn't take that away from me. I think a year or two after that, the rule was changed, and if you got knocked out of bounds, you could come back in, which then several of my teammates started calling the Gossam Rule. So... it didn't end the way I wanted to end, but hey, 40 years later, we're still talking about it. So, it was a great play, I thought.
Well, and you had a great career anyway. I mean, you led the team in receiving that year by far. And just like you said, 3-year starter on some really great teams. And that was good. And we'll probably come back in a minute to your football career. But let's get to what everybody wants to hear about. First of all, though, tell us about your books. Your book you wrote.
My book's called Walk On, which, you know, we just finished talking about. Walk On, My Reluctant Journey to Integration at Auburn University. It came out in 2008. Matter of fact, the second edition has just come out this year. It's been very, very well received. I think it's been very well received by the general public. I've gotten letters from people all over the country about it. I understand that Bo Pelini at Nebraska is having it. I got letters from University of Oregon. People have really found a piece of themselves in the book. I say that Walk On is for all those people who ever walked on to anything in their lives. They may have been uninvited. They may have not been the first choice. They may have been knocked down, but they got up and they achieved. And so it really is a story of a young man with dreams, dreaming that he could not only, I guess, rise to the top of the sports world, but also could make a difference. And while I was there at Auburn, I became the first black athlete to graduate from Auburn, tried to make a difference in the fact that we were going through the whole cultural integration process. I oftentimes was the person selected, whether that was good or bad. I oftentimes was the messenger, whether it be with the administration or whether it be with the coaching administration, to talk about the changes that were unfolding as we were living through them, and to talk about how things were different, to talk about how things needed to be different, and then to try to be an example, a positive example, of what could happen as we went through this cultural change. And I grew up in a very separate world in terms of black and white people. It was illegal when I was a child for black kids and white kids to play sports together. Now you think today how stupid that is, but that's how things were. And the thing about history that we have to understand is that, and we have to revisit, people oftentimes will say, particularly people who may not have had a, maybe that wasn't a positive time in your life, they always say, why do we want to go back and talk about that? We talk about that to learn about the present and to learn about the future and to learn how change can be very, very scary to people, particularly the ones who feel like something is going to be taken away from them. And so it's been an interesting book. The Auburn Nation has received it very, very well. I think it's a book that is part sports, parts, maybe civil rights, but most importantly, it's a story about a young man and his dream and what he was willing to do, how much work he was willing to put in to achieve his dream.
Well, that's great, Tom. I can't wait to read the book myself now. I really can't, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that way too. You've had a superb, really acting career.
Let me put a commercial in right quick before
go
to another subject.
Yes, sir.
You can get the book at bestgirl.com, bestgurl.com, and I will be glad to autograph one and send it. If you'll go to that website and handle the purchase through there, you can get an autographed copy from me. Of course, you can also go to Amazon. It may be in some bookstores in and around throughout the country. I originally did an exclusive deal with Borders, and, of course, Borders went out of business. But if you'd like to get one from me and get it personalized, go to bestgirl.com, and the girl is spelled G-U-R-L.
Yes, sir.
Got that commercial in. Okay.
No, that's good. Thank you. I mean, that's the information is what that is.
Because Jim, did you negotiate our commission rates before we put him on?
I sure did. He's paying us what we paying him. It's a great wash there. What are some give us before I got a few other questions. Certainly,
sure.
Tom and Adam's going to have a couple of questions. But what are some of the highlights of your acting career? I remember I loved you in The Heat of the Night because that was one of my shows I loved to watch when you were the mayor there, and you know I could tell everybody I know that guy. We're really really great friends, you know. Give us some of the highlights of some of the things you've been in that people will know and that sort of thing. Because
the Heat of the Night is a highlight for me simply because that's where I learned television. I learned television acting on that show. I had started doing theater, and I didn't get started acting until I was 29, and that's old for an actor to start. Most actors, when you watch people on television, there are very few who weren't child actors or who started in their teens. And so I started doing theater in Birmingham. A guy there, I was doing a show, I think on Southside, and a guy came to see me who was a movie director who was doing a film in Birmingham. And so he wrote me into his film, and that's how I got my Screen Actors Guild card and got into Guild and got started. About a year later, I had an agent in Atlanta, and I went to an audition with Carol O'Connor on In the Heat of the Night. I got that job. That ended up being a recurring job, which meant I worked on that show for the next 7 years. And at one point, we were the number one show in the country, and I lived in Birmingham in my house. And so it was like, oh, man, this is easy. I just stay at home and drive over to Georgia and do my job and drive back. And but that was a great, great opportunity for me to work with some fantastic actors like Howard Rollins,
with a lot of great guest stars. But to work with Carol, who is Mr. Television as far as I was concerned, to be able to learn, to be able to watch them and to learn. Carol not only starred in the show, he was the executive producer, but he also wrote many of the shows. And he wrote some of them under his name, and he wrote under another name, the name of Matt Harris. And so to watch this man, we'd be working on a show, and he'd be sitting there writing another one while we were waiting in between takes. And so I just got a great person to learn from. And I will tell you this, not only to learn the mechanics of television acting, but also how to handle yourself when you achieve some level of stardom. And I say that because the lady who played Aunt Etta on that show would bring, whenever we would have church scenes or courtroom scenes or large crowd scenes, Carol would allow her to bring her students from Alabama State University. She was the chair, is the chair of the theater department there. And so she may bring over 20 students, 30 students, depending upon what the scene called for. And she, this one day we were working, television is a long day, it's 14 hours, generally. We were very tired. We'd gotten off about 9:30 that night, gotten there about 7:30 that morning. Carol had had a heart attack and he'd missed 2 or 3 months. It was his first week back. He was very weak. And he came out, and he was leaving for the day, and one of those kids, the kids were on the bus getting ready to go back to Montgomery. The kids got off the bus and wanted to know if they could take pictures with Carol. And I watched him for the next hour take a picture with every one of those kids and sign something for every one of those kids. And I thought, man, you know, if Mr. Television can be that generous with himself, then why can't I? And so I got to learn from a star of how you conduct yourself when you're really a star. And so that was one of my great things. Fight Club was very interesting. I got to work with Brad Pitt, Ed Boyd, and David Fincher. Jeepers Creepers 2 is one that the young people relate to. And so, you know, when I tell people I was in Fight Club and Jeepers Creepers 2, the young people, they all recognize those. And then they all go back and watch them again. NYPD Blue, we won an Emmy for that episode. It was a great piece of work. I still get work today because of that piece of work. I played a mute, homeless mute, who was accused of molesting and killing a young boy. He didn't do it. Of course, he didn't talk. And so I had to be able to sell this character and emit emotion from people without talking. And it was probably the hardest job I've ever done. But it's certainly the most satisfying job I've ever done. I've done a lot of television. I just did an episode of Drop Dead Diva last week. I did a couple of auditions for some new stuff that may come out. I'm doing some stuff up in Charlotte in the fall. So I've managed to work at it for 30 years, and that's a long time in this business to be able to do business. And so I'm very grateful. And I got a lot of good training right there in Birmingham. And the fun thing is to then go and work with people that you probably worked with 10 years ago or 5, 15 years ago or whatever, and have the opportunity to work with them again. That's fun. It's taken me, I've probably worked in 12 or 13 different states. I've worked all across Canada. I'm up for another job now up in Toronto. And so, and it's opened so many other doors for me. I'm producing a film, a documentary right now on James Owens, who you know is the first African-American football player at Auburn University, which was the first in the state to commit to signing African-American football players. And the film is called Quiet Courage, and hopefully it'll be out this fall. Should be a really nice piece. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful ride.
Yeah, James was one of our guests. Two shows ago.
Yeah, James is my good friend for a long time.
Things,
a lot of
things he's done since football were, to me, very, very meaningful.
Yeah. Well, James is an incredible minister and just a quality human being. And I don't think there's anybody who knows him that would probably say any different.
Well, I'll say this, Tom, the whole time you were at Auburn, I don't know of anybody. There you were, a black player walking on. I don't know of anybody that ever said a bad thing about you that didn't. I don't know of anybody that didn't like you, and that was remarkable. You were also, like James, the right person at the right time, and
appreciate you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you saying that. It's been. I think when you're that age, I was lucky. I'd had an integration experience at John Carroll High School in Birmingham, and it had been a very positive experience. And so I had been through the experience of maybe some people not liking you because of who you were. I also recognized when I got to Auburn that a lot of those kids had been legally separated all their lives. And so it was maybe them not wanting to, but not knowing how. And so I do think that I was put in that position, both James and I, for specific reasons. And those reasons were far more important than who won a football game.
But we did win
a lot of football games.
You sure did. And when you're acting with some of those people, I imagine it's this way, like it is kind of even, you know, I'm a lawyer, just people want to hear about football and you playing football and college football.
Oh, yeah.
It gives you, of credibility as much as just here they are, famous actors, and they want to hear about what you did. Do you find that where you go?
I think when you tell people two things, and I think this is certainly a credit to Auburn University. When you tell people that you went to Auburn, there's a hmm that goes through their brain. You know, you can almost hear them go, hmm, because they recognize the significance. It's a quality institution. So it has a brand. And so that brand then translates to you, and it says something about you. Then when you say that you played football there, certainly the football brand is national and maybe international. And so then that says something else about you. And yeah, all actors want to be sportsmen, and maybe some sportsmen want to be actors, and then some actors want to be musicians. But yeah, I have found that particularly when my book came out. I mean, my books floated all over Hollywood, and there were people who knew me only as an actor. And who had been a different appreciation for my, exploits as an athlete, and then also the cultural changes that we witnessed and that we came through. And so I really think, and I'll say this about athletics. When I came along, the athletes that I admired were more socially active. Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, Bill Russell, Bobby Mitchell became the first black player for Washington in the NFL, which was the last team to integrate. Washington integrated because President Kennedy threatened to throw them out of RFK Stadium if, in fact, they didn't integrate the football team, and they had a very favorable lease there. And so those were the guys that I looked up to who were great guys on the field, but who had a social consciousness off the field and who talked about how we could move things forward. As a matter of fact, I wore number 49 because that's the number Bobby Mitchell wore. So I wore that number in honor of Bobby Mitchell. Nobody at Auburn knew that, but that was my little dedication to Bobby Mitchell. And so I knew that that we would... That it was historical. And so I think when people find it out, they have a different appreciation. You know, now we're going through, the city of Birmingham's going through the 50-year commemoration. Universities like Auburn will be going through the 50-year commemoration. Auburn integrated January 3rd, 1964. Henry Harris signed at Auburn in 1968, which would have been the first black athlete in the Deep South, and that's Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Carolinas, Florida, Louisiana. And so Auburn has a great history there, Doesn't mean everything was perfect, but it's the history nevertheless. So yeah, there's some great appreciation for Auburn, and I've been lucky to be an ambassador for Auburn, and Auburn's been great for me, and hopefully I've been good to Auburn.
Well, Jim, we're actually out of time on this episode. We're gonna take a break for this week and come back, have part two with Tom Gossom on our next episode.
Tom, he's a very busy guy, and we had some scheduling problems, and now we're going to make it two shows instead of just one because how interesting. How interesting, what a good fella, and how interesting, and what a credit to Auburn.
That's right. Well, Jim, let's end our episode. We don't have Tom to give us a big war eagle on this episode, but he will on our next one, I'm sure. So I guess you and I are going to have to do it. War eagle.
War eagle, Adam.